The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you to the second half of the program on this Friday afternoon. Mike Oresko, who's the commissioner of the AAC, will join us shortly. We'll get his take as someone who is not only a head of a sports network, but now sits in one of those coveted seats trying to make this incredibly difficult determination. We've already had Brett McMurphy, who said he thinks there's only about a 25% chance of a season, and former New York Times investigative reporter and best-selling author Alex Berenson, whose words today have already drawn quite a bit of criticism. Let's get to the calls, and Andy is in Chicago on this Friday. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. So, Paul, you've got the ear of the movers and shakers who are at the heart of the decisions that are going to be made here as it relates to this season. And to the extent you could ever get the ear of some of these presidents who, and by the way, you are spot on, the presidents look at this question totally different than a college coach or an AD or a commissioner. They look at it differently because they came up to their positions of power through totally different pipelines, through academic roles, et cetera. But here would be the question that I would hope you could ask a president. Would be, so let me get this straight. You've decided that the best way to avoid causing harms to your student athletes is to see how many student athletes you harm and then make a decision regarding how to avoid harming them. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And, college presidents are influenced by things other than ESPN and sports blogs. And that's why I think, and a lot of people didn't agree, Andy, but when the Ivy League made its decision, it seemed like that sent shockwaves around because the presidents were paying attention. I mean, and why would a president pay more attention to the Ivy League? Because that is the ultimate. That's the zenith of college academia. So I think you're going to start hearing presidents, and that's why this NCAA council meeting today is important, because who is on that council? College presidents.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and one more thing, too, about college presidents. If they don't have a college football season, they will survive. Their athletic budgets may get shredded, but they'll still be there. The one way a college president could be injured in this is if they green light a football season and it turns into an absolute catastrophe.
Yeah, which is what we're all trying to avoid at all costs at the end of the day.
Yeah, and there's another thing too, Andy, and I want to thank you for your call. I've been in a lot of presidents' offices, and usually as you walk out of the presidential suite, about three or four doors down, there would be the office of the counsel to the president. And I'm sure university councils are being consulted every day right now about the risk of having all of these things happen. And ultimately liability, not only the real liability, but the perceived liability of a university is going to be a factor. Let's check in with Manny, who is in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hello, Manny.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
We are doing great. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I got a couple of scoops for you coming in from the university, and I'd like to state up front that this is protected by the Sunshine Law, so I hope I'm at no risk.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. The first scoop is on the Saban family, who we dearly love. It turns out Miss Terry has bought some retirement land in Auburn, and they're constructing a house. yes, sir. It seems that they want to be, or she wants to be, as far away from college football as possible.
That's an old joke that we used to use, Manny. You told it well.
Yeah, well, thank you. It never hurts to resurrect it. You had some good smack talk going yesterday on the program. I thought I would just add a little to it.
So what we've talked to you a couple of times before. You're on the campus down there, or you work on that campus. What do you hear?
I am. Well, the latest is this. I mean, it's all circumstantial, but it's adding up to school, which equals adding up to football. Our latest communication is that enrollment for undergraduates is down, especially out-of-state undergraduates, which is the bulk of our enrollment. It is projected right now to be 7%. It is approaching that number already. So there is an immediate budget cut of 5% subject to increase. The other thing is that we were also instructed that faculty would be doing pre-opening COVID testing this week, and that ended today, and we still never got called in to do it. So as one faculty member on the grapevine said, it's looking pretty fishy as far as whether we're going to start on time, which means that we are taking seriously what's going on with the students. And I mean, I'll weigh in with my personal thing here, Paul. If you've got to be installing plexiglass around the classroom and splitting classes in half and doing everything you can to limit contact, I mean, it just seems obvious that this is a risky situation and we should not take the risk. We have heard from Mr. Berenson earlier, I believe was his name, that...
Right, Alex Berenson.
Yes, sir. The young people are not as high of a risk, but we not only have faculty and staff to consider, there are many young students there who do have physical ailments, and some of them known and some of them unknown as of yet. And the whole thing is just too risky. It seems obvious. If this were the chess club, we'd have already shut down.
Well, let me ask you, as somebody who was on faculty, I've tried maybe very poorly to explain how an academician looks at this, namely a college president. And college presidents normally come from academia. They're usually professors who become deans, who become whatever. Would you mind giving that one a shot? Because I think too many people are looking at the athletic people and not the people in the ivory tower.
I agree. I think, you know, in sympathy with our president, our board, and our provost, and all of the admin, as well as the faculty and the staff, I think we all just love our students dearly, and we love our job. That's why we put our whole careers into it. So for us, the thought of an outbreak on campus, for anybody at any level, administration down to the youngest freshman, I think for us, that would just be not only heartbreaking, but just a terrible thing to be a part of. So I just don't see us with any good conscience pulling the trigger on putting students in the class. And, of course, for your audience, that by extension would indicate the athletes as well.
Manny, please stay in touch. Stay well and you've been a great resource to us. Manny's on the faculty down there. Logan is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hi, Paul. TGIF, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you.
So I just want to say the interview with Alex B, that was awesome. He's a very interesting guy. I don't know that I agree with everything he says, but I do like to get contrasting views from what I hear most times. But, you know, I think that we need to keep up the fight. A couple of things that I've heard from your callers. I think our government as a whole has really failed this country. Trump being number one, I know he came out with a mask mandate the other day, or at least.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a mandate. It was an advisory.
Yeah. Advisory. So he was saying, now, you know, I don't understand why it took so long for him to say that. You know, I mean, it's common sense. I think a lot of people listened to him, and I think that would have been something that he should have done a long time ago. But other than that, I mean, you know, Dr. Fauci was out there last night, and he bounced. I think he bounced the first pitch, Paul. So I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I hate to tell Dr. Fauci this, but I don't know if he'll ever be the same again after that performance.
It was terrible, man. I was like, you know, I mean, at least George W. Bush through that strike. That's what we need to see.
Yeah,
right,
and I read a book about President. Again, President Bush was considerably younger. He was 30 or 40 years younger. He once said that was as nervous as he has ever been in his life, and I'm pretty sure he was either in the bullpen, not in the where you can see, but he was underneath the bowels of Yankee Stadium warming up. I mean, he knew that was an important moment because here for those who don't know what we're talking about. In the aftermath of 9/11, President Bush threw out the first pitch and as they renewed when the World Series was continued. It wasn't continued, but it was in New York. And, I mean, he knew that was a big moment for the country. What Fauci did last night, I think, unfortunately, will be on every blooper tape in America this weekend.
I know. I was hating it, Paul. I was looking on YouTube, and I was just like, oh,
I was asked to do that a couple of years ago, and somebody I knew, it was a former Major League Baseball player, and he told me how to do it, and it turned out that it didn't come to fruition. But people, you don't want to go, and I have done that, by the way. I have made a fool out of myself in front of a lot of people before. It's something you don't want to do, Logan. And in Fauci's case, he made it worse today by saying he woke up with it and his arm was sore. We will be back with one of the commissioners who will be part of this big decision that we've been talking about for months now. The commissioner of the AAC, Mike Oresco, will join us in a moment.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. Great to have you here on a Friday afternoon. And really looking forward to our next guest. He is Mike Oresco, who not only was an executive at ESPN, but for many, many years was one of the top sports executives at CBS. He is now the commissioner of the AAC and someone we always enjoy talking to. Commissioner, thank you. Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul, and thanks for the kind words. Always enjoy being with you.
Well, here we are. You and your colleagues around the country have been wrestling with this question for many, many months, and we're heading into the final week of July, so I think it's a pretty obvious question. Where are we, and what's next?
Paul, that's the question, and no question. I called it crunch time, and I think we're nearing decision time. I believe the SEC made a statement about July 31 as where they would put out some word about the start of the season. Obviously, I think within the next week and a half, we'll get word. Pac-12, I don't know whether this is still a rumor or whether it's real, probably real. Pac-12 looks like they may be starting September 19th, or at least that's the plan, and playing their 10 conference games, and they seem pretty intent on playing. It probably would surprise a lot of people because of what's happening in California and Arizona, but of course, you can't speak for them. And it looks like the Big 12, I read today, one of their presidents who is on the board said that they might actually take a few more weeks to make a decision as to the start of the season. We're monitoring it closely, Paul. We do think there'll be some word in the next week and a half about starting. I don't know whether it's 50-50 as to whether we can start on time or whether some conferences start on time but others don't, others postpone. We're going to watch that because we realize that although we want to be masters of our own destiny, we also know that we have to really be cognizant of what the A5 are doing, and obviously whatever they do will have a real impact on us.
Commissioner, I mean, you've got legal training. You've certainly looked at all of this from countless sides. As you and everyone tries to make this determination, I'm really curious to get inside your mind and others, especially yours. What are you wrestling with right now?
Several things. Obviously, health and safety primary. I mean, I can't stress that enough. Everybody talks about the financial implications and the potentially catastrophic situation. And by the way, I don't know whether you'd want to discuss this later, but I'm not a huge fan of spring football. I think there are all sorts of problems with it. So I think we should do everything we can to play in the fall. But we're wrestling with probably a half dozen things. One, what's the course of the pandemic? That's going to tell us, to some extent, maybe to a large extent, what we can do. We have some good news, and again, I say good news in a qualified way because obviously any case is bad, but the cases in Houston and Dallas seem to have plateaued and are now going down. Dallas had, several days, possibly even weeks of 1,000 cases, and now it seems to be going down into the 700 range. That's what I just heard today. We can check that for accuracy, but the point is that's critical. If you've got hot spots in Florida and elsewhere, and we've got issues in Pennsylvania, then it's harder to play. Second, we're keeping a close eye on baseball, NBA, MLS, NHL. That's not, an exact comparison, Paul, because as you know, the testing is different. But it will matter what they do, and it will buttress, our case for playing if they can pull it off successfully, and if they can't, it would probably harm our case. When students return to campus, that's one of the wild cards about whether you want to start the season on time, because when students start returning to campus, and some of our students are already there, and SMU's got, a contingent on campus, others do as well, and if they return to campus and things are under control, that's obviously very, very important. If the campuses have to close down, it's hard to see how we play. Our practice is being disrupted. Right now, we only have one school in our conference, ECU, which had to suspend practice. Others have had either zero tests or are getting down closer to zero positives in maybe 3 out of 100 or one. One school had one. Another school I know had none. Obviously, you heard about Clemson and Oklahoma having none at the moment. So that's a good trend, and that's got to continue. Positives need to be going down. Practices, if they're disrupted, you really would have a hard time starting on time. Also, the other thing is state and local governments. We're wrestling with a situation in Philadelphia right now with Temple because there is a quarantine. If you play, for instance, they've got a game at Miami. Don't know yet whether it's going to happen because we don't know whether the ACC is going to play non-conference games. But if, in fact, they do, Temple would have a hard time because they have a quarantine right now. They'd have to come back and quarantine for 2 weeks. And they're talking to their state and local governments about that, whether they can get an exemption. And that could be true elsewhere. Are there going to be there's a whole patchwork call around the country of quarantines, and are there going to be any travel bans? So again, if things improve, I think we've got a reasonable shot. If they don't in these areas, and then testing, our testing continues to be more sophisticated. We're within the 72-hour window. We're going to try to do it closer to game time, but the concern is whether you get your test back in time. That's really the key thing. But there are advances, and also you might have a backup way to test, meaning the antigen tests. Those are the point of care. Those are the rapid response tests, saliva. I guess you could describe them many different ways. But those are not as readily available, and I think nursing homes and hospitals may need them. But if they become available, that's another way to test. It gives us even another safeguard. So those are the kinds of things we're looking at as to whether we can play on time or whether we can ultimately play at all.
There was two interesting stories coming out of Michigan State, and I realize that's not your league, Commissioner, but number one, they announced they were shutting down for 14 days because of a second staffer, and number two, and maybe even more interesting, one of their linemen tweeted that really this is about revenue, it's about money, otherwise we wouldn't be having this conversation. I know you're worldly enough to not to be surprised by me asking you about that, even because you've already alluded to it, but it just seems to some people, not everyone, that this is about money. Otherwise, the decision would have been made. How do you? I mean, you hear that. I'm sure it doesn't make you feel good. How do you address that?
No, it doesn't, because I think for 5 months now, all we've thought about is health and safety. Every call we've had with our ADs, every call we've had with our presidents, and believe me, there have been many, Every call we've had with other commissioners, every call we've had with our, you know, other people involved, it's all been about health and safety and whether there's any there's a safe way to do this. Look, we know there'll be a significant financial hit. No one's arguing that, and we're trying to plan for that. You know, we're looking at, you know, we have a healthy reserve in our conference. I don't need to get into all that, but we have a, you know, we're looking into a line of credit. We're looking into trying to mitigate, you know, what will be obviously a significant financial hit. And obviously, if we didn't play football at all and basketball, for some conferences, it could be catastrophic. But that is not ultimately going to drive this. And I guarantee you we have not thought about that. We've looked at it a couple of ways. The student-athletes want to play. We poll our student-athletes and obviously talk to their parents. And to 90 to 100% of our football players want to play, and our fall sports kids want to play. And they want to play because obviously it's a significant thing in their lives, and if they can do it safely, they want to know we're doing everything, you know, we can do to keep it safe. The other point I've made, Paul, is are the student-athletes better off ultimately in a controlled environment where you're having testing, where you're having temperature checks, where you're doing screening, where you're, you know, health screens, where you have sanitized facilities, you're not off campus, you're not at home, you're not leaving school, you're not at school, but using gyms that aren't as clean and as obviously sanitized, weight rooms. We're encouraging the wearing of masks, social distancing. I think the kids have been told, you know, the fear of God has been put into them. Look, if you want to play football, you're going to have to do some things differently when you're back with your fellow students and you're back in your dorms or you're back wherever, because ultimately, you know, one case, two cases could prevent the team from playing. So I think that seems to have sunk in. Our people seem to think so, and I've heard that from other conferences, talking to other commissioners. And I talked, you know, again, I'm not going to attribute that to Commissioner Sankey, but I talk to Greg all the time. Greg's a good friend, and we talk. And I know that I think in the SEC, from what I've heard, certainly the positives have gone down. And I think the educational aspect of this is important. But, you know, Paul, in life, anytime you do something, there's always a reaction. There's always a consequence. Are these kids better off not being tested weekly? They might get the virus in many different ways. 18 to 22-year-olds do things, not bad things, but things that in a pandemic obviously cause problems. If that's the case, then you know, they may not get tested. They may bring the virus home. They may spread it. They may get sicker because they're not being screened and they're not getting the kind of health care they need. So, again, I think that in a controlled environment with the testing, and the testing's not perfect, no one's arguing it is, but I think with those things in place, I think we can have a reasonably safe environment. As our doctors say, and we've got an excellent medical group with Dr. Greg Stewart of Tulane heads it up. You've got great medical centers in our conference. What they've said is this is all about risk reduction. It can't be risk elimination because we can't eliminate risk. And there are many things on a campus that we can't eliminate, obviously, risks. And if there were meningitis on a campus, potentially, I don't know that the campus would shut down, but the campus would have to be cognizant of that, and there would have to be controls put into place. That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to reach a reasonable level of risk to play because it means a lot to the student-athletes to play. It means a lot to the coaches to play. It means a lot to the communities to have them play. But we're not going to play, ultimately, if it's not safe at a certain level. Now, you could argue, okay, what is that level? We're going to have to decide that. And our medical group, if they told us to stop, Paul, I'm pretty certain that our board would say that's it. But our medical people have not told us to stop. They think we can do this in a reasonably safe manner. All sorts of protocols in place. And again, the testing, while it isn't perfect, it will go a long way toward helping us do what we want to do. But I think that's where we are. And I understand the financial issues, but they have never, ever been in the forefront. And yet they're going to be significant. No one's arguing that.
Before you go, we're chatting with Commissioner Mike Oresko of the AAC. There are some contradictions out there, though, Commissioner. At best, this is not going to be normal. We're not going to have the things that we love the most, the tailgating, the sold-out stadiums. And what's even more peculiar to some, or maybe distasteful, is that on a lot of campuses, as you well know, there aren't going to be many students in classrooms. There may be students, but that is a major challenge. I mean, so the questions are going to be asked forever about why we're doing this. And I know you've answered it very eloquently, and you know how I feel about you. But how difficult is that to answer, that we're putting young people through this, while the university is not letting very many people, and in some cases nobody, to come back and sit in a classroom and look at a professor.
You know, Paul, I've wrestled with this, and you know, you're a thoughtful person, and that's why you've been successful over your career. You know, you've dug deep into these issues. I wrestle with this. You know, this is a matter of conscience for all of us. We do not want to put kids in harm's way. And what we're trying to do here, though, is realize that there is a value in what they do, and they themselves feel that this is important to try to do. You know, Everett R. Murrow once said, difficulty is an excuse history has never accepted. This is going to be really difficult, and there may be a lot of disruptions, and we're cognizant of that. But I also think that, again, you have to weigh, if these student-athletes don't play, you know, again, they might be at greater risk for the virus than if they're playing because of the testing, because of all the things I mentioned. In addition, what about, you know, kids who won't be able to play and might get depressed? And there might be, you know, ramifications from that. Or, you know, they might decide to drop out of school. I mean, who knows? I'm not suggesting that they would. But I think there are all sorts of things, consequences, just as the lockdowns had a lot of different consequences. However you feel about the lockdowns, they had a lot of different consequences. So we've wrestled with this. Believe me, I think about it all the time. Everybody has taken it extremely seriously. No one is being cavalier about these risks. We understand that the risks of the disease to young people are very, very relatively slight and mild, but that doesn't mean you don't want anybody to get it, and you know that there also could be complications. But I'm not sure that playing sports is going to pose, you know, a greater risk than they would have otherwise. Now, as far as the campus goes, there will be students on campus. I don't think, Paul, we'd be doing this if most of the campuses had very few, if any, students on campus. I really do think that was one of the issues. I mean, we thought about it. We thought that, again, maybe you could play because, you know, the student athletes wanted to play. Everybody wanted to play, even if there were very few students on campus or none. But, you know, my thinking's evolved on that. I think if the campuses close down or they have virtually no students, it would be harder to play. But I think they're going to have... Most of our schools plan to open. They plan to have a contingent of students. Some already do. Most have had students all summer on campus. They may not have the full complement. You know, you may not see 40,000 students on campus, 50,000 students at the bigger schools. But you might see a lot of, you know, Cornell's planning to bring 22,000 students back, and they think they can do it safely. That's probably going to be true in all the, you know, the major conferences. We'll see how that goes. And, by the way, if that doesn't work, Paul, then I'm not sure that it wouldn't be shut down. So again, I think everybody's taking it very seriously. It's not being done for the money. The issue is, can you do it? It's part of what we do. It's part of, you know, our cultural and social fabric for these kids and for anybody connected to it. And you try to do it if you can. It's just like life has to go on if you can do it. I mean, we're in a pandemic. That's why, you know, we may not have a vaccine, and I don't know what's going to happen with basketball and you know, in spring sports. And, you know, the NCAA board will be making some decisions about fall championships. We don't know what they're going to do. Obviously, we've all urged them to hold off and not make any decisions now because we learn more each week. You know, there's that whole issue of spring football. But all these things taken together are hard issues, Paul. No one's arguing that they're not. But, again, I think we've got to give it a try. If it doesn't work, we'll know it. And we'll act accordingly.
Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the AAC, and in my opinion, one of the most thoughtful and influential people in this industry because of the background that you've had in network television at major places and now. Commissioner, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for the kind words again, Paul, and thanks for having me. And again, you and your family stay well as your listeners and everybody in the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. An extraordinary conversation with Commissioner Oresko. We will talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. Some news coming to what we thought could be one of the bigger stories of the day. According to Pete Thamel, the NCAA Board of Governors decided not to make a decision. They had been expected to cancel the fall championship. That's all the other sports that are played in the fall. They were under severe pressure by the Power Five commissioners and others not to do it, so they have kicked that can down the road. But they will ultimately vote, and they are not expected to send a good message. So then their next meeting is August 4th. So that will be when? A week after next. So we have July 31st, which is the original drop-dead date that the SEC offered, and then that is next Friday. So we move into the beginning of the following week when the NCAA will meet. So that's going to be a very big couple of days. We have a very big week and a half coming up in college athletics. Appreciate Mike Oresko. What a great conversation that was. And Kevin is up next in North Carolina. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, hey, Paul. Thanks for letting me visit again.
Thank you.
Hope you're staying well. Say some of the biggest news of the day was the ACC announced that, or somebody scooped it, that they were going to have a 10-game conference schedule plus one. I think the ACC has the most complex shuffling of a schedule, simply because of, obviously, the four games against in-state rivalry schools. We all know them. Plus, you got Auburn and Carolina, and you got NC State and Mississippi State. So those games can hang on if that's their plus one for those two schools. But Notre Dame is very interesting. They're scheduled to play six ACC schools this year. So if they go to 10 and let them in, which the report says, to play for the ACC championship, they would have to have four more games. And I'm guessing Florida State, Miami would be two of those four for sure. I don't know the other guys. But the situation is that, Notre Dame's down to nine schools yet, with Southern Cal, Stanford, and Wisconsin canceling their non-conference games by their leagues.
The situation also, And for those who don't know, Notre Dame, just for a point of clarification that you know, Kevin, Notre Dame is a member of the ACC in every sport other than football, so they have a relationship. This year they are going to be a member, at least just for the year.
Right, exactly, just for the year. And, the three remaining Notre Dame games are Western Michigan, which they can buy out, and they have to pick one if they're playing 10 ACC schools, Arkansas and Navy. Well, they're going to pick Navy, Paul.
Sure,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, but I don't know if most of your listeners know, that Navy, the U.S. Navy, saved Notre Dame's bacon
right
back in the 50s. Notre Dame, of course, was going through the Depression like everybody else. It was a fairly expensive private school. They didn't let women in at the time. And then along comes World War One, and, obviously young men were signing up because of Pearl Harbor, et cetera, our entrance into World War One. And the U.S. Naval Academy could not train enough officers for it to gear up for the war. So they had to pick another place, another campus, to train extra officers. The story goes down to, it was between Notre Dame and Michigan State, because they wanted something close to Lake Michigan, obviously it's the Navy. But Chester Nimitz, the Admiral, Chester Nimitz made the call to pick Notre Dame, okay? It just so happens it didn't hurt that Chester Nimitz was Catholic, okay? So it saved Notre Dame's bacon from staying. It would have closed. The university would have closed. That's the dire straits they were in. Chester Nimitz picked Notre Dame, and that's why Notre Dame will always play Navy. So getting back to, if they scuttle Arkansas game, okay, then Arkansas would obviously have to find another non-conference game if they play their if they're going to play 10, 9 conference games and a non-conference game, you know, which is the scuttlebutt, is that the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 are all going to try to play 11 games. Okay, so the Big 12, they only play 9 conference games. They would need 2 non-conference games, okay? And, you know, the big some of the SEC schools would also need an extra game that don't play the ACC schools. That would be 8 schools, if my math is correct, that would need an extra game, which they can, you know, obviously fill in the Big 12 needing 1 or 2 more conference games. So I think that's a real interesting point, but the bottom line is it's a big, big if. I don't think it's going to happen, Kevin.
If you're running a business, you have to prepare. If you heard our last guest, and he's running a very big business in a conference, he put a lot of doubt into where we're going next. Hate to run. We're a little bit late because the interview ran long. We are going to take a break. Back with another hour and 15 minutes after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we are back here on a Friday afternoon, and Cat Daddy is next.
Every time Cat Daddy has to go to Walmart, they make me stand in line. Every time I go over to McDonald's, they make Cat Daddy stand in line. They tell me, get back, get back, you got the social distance line. Get back, get back, you got social distance line. How you doing, Big Paul?
Cat Daddy, I am doing great. It's Friday. The week's over. I don't know what's ahead, but who cares?
Well, I just want to cheer everybody up, you know. We got to start getting in a better mood now. And praise the Lord and, you know, just keep it going. We got to have peace.
Well, we're doing okay.
But did you see the Dr. Fauci at that baseball game? He was sitting up there and didn't have his mask on.
No, I saw that.
I couldn't believe that. He was telling about wearing masks. He's up there. What man? One. My wife said, "What's he not wearing his mask for?" I said, "I don't know. Maybe he's eating a hot dog and drinking a beer or something. I don't know."
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind you. Yeah, his wife didn't have it on at all, and I don't know who the guy next to him was, but Fauci had a bad night.
Yeah, I'm telling you what, he ain't gonna get.
Tell me what this is. It wasn't a ball. It wasn't a strike. It wasn't a pass ball. It wasn't a wild pitch. I mean, I've never seen a pitch that bad. Have you?
Nope. I ain't seen a pitch that bad. I don't know anybody pitch that bad. Whitey Ford didn't pitch bad. I'm going to tell you what, he ain't no Whitey Ford. I'll say it ever. But anyway, Mr. Feinbaum, I hope you have a great weekend, you and your wife, and tell everybody out there to keep hope alive.
We will. Thank you very much. David is up next. Hey, David.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
David, I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
Great. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about Notre Dame being in the ACC.
Okay.
All right. Let's say Alabama takes care of business and they go undefeated. Ohio State takes care of business, goes undefeated. Clemson and Notre Dame already play each other in the regular season. What if they face each other again in the championship game and split? Will they both make it into the championship, the playoffs, if there's only 4 teams?
Well, they could, yes. Now, you know, some of it depends on, I mean, let's just rule the Pac-12 out, okay? They're not going to get in. Unless Oregon, you know, by the way, I take it back. Oregon was able to get rid of its toughest game of the year against Ohio State. So they are going to be in a better spot than they would have been. So, you know, would an undefeated Oregon, which really hasn't played their best, which lost the Ohio State game, would they be a contender undefeated? Would Oklahoma, the whole Big 12 controversy? I would probably go with both Clemson and Notre Dame. That depends on, of course, you know, what about Georgia and Alabama? What if they, if Georgia only has one loss and Alabama has one loss and they play each other twice? We're up against a break. I know that was fast. We have another hour to go. Stick around.